Look, it's a great pleasure for me to speak to the Records Managers Forum again. And thank you to Jeff and to Catherine and to State Records for inviting me. While we're celebrating 20 years since the launch of AS4390, you're going to get used to hearing those six letters and numbers a lot, I'm afraid, in the next 20 minutes. It's nearly 20 years since we started the Records Managers Forum, which was in January 1997, wasn't it, Catherine? And I'm glad to know that it's still useful and still going strong. My brief is to talk about the history of the development of standards in Australia. I really want to talk about AS4390 since it's its launch that we're celebrating today, and I think it's worth talking about occasionally and specifically. And also it's going to be more of a personal perspective than a history, so I'm really not going to follow your brief at all. What I want to do is to firstly take a look at the place of AS4390 in the standards and related developments in the record keeping area in the 1990s, and secondly I'm going to take a look at just a few of the cutting edge content in AS4390 that's still relevant today. Now, I've mentioned the 20 year thing a couple of times, and if we were to hop into a time machine, whether it's the TARDIS or a hot tub or whatever takes your fancy, and go back 25 years, we'd see a world in which standards played really no part in our records management practice, and they really weren't a part of, really weren't mentioned in professional discourse either. Our colleagues in Victoria might say, well, the Public Record Act of 1973 gave the Public Records Office of Victoria the power to make records management standards, and which is true. But really all they did in the first 20 years anyway was to produce disposal authorities, and to my mind that's not the same thing. Now, that's not a criticism, that's how they interpreted it, and in the last 20 years PROV has been one of the major contributors to the collective stock of records management standards, along with State Records, National Archives of New Zealand, Queensland State Archives and other government records authorities. But the point is that AS4390, both the process of its development and the finished product, was central to the transformation of our professional environment, to one in which standards play such an important role. It's easy to say AS4390 was the first national records management standard, as indeed it was, but it's worth remembering that it made quite a splash in the professional world, around the world, and just as a couple of personal examples, I was invited to speak at NAGARA, the National Association of Government Archives and Records Administrators, in Sacramento in 1997, specifically about AS4390 and what it meant and all the changes that that it represented. It led directly to the development of the international standards on records management, AS ISO 15489, based, we might argue about how much it was based, but based quite a bit in significant ways on AS4390, and which replaced AS4390 as the Australian standard in due course. And the start of that process, internationalising AS4390, if you like, which was a meeting of the International Standards Committee in Athens in May 1998, was really my swan song in this whole story. But Barbara carried on in playing a central role in the development of that standard, which was released in 2002, along with other eminent Australian practitioners, and in subsequent iterations of that standard and a whole range of related standards. But I'm getting beyond my focus, which is really AS4390. Now, continuing with putting it in context, although it was seminal in records management, AS4390's development was paralleled by standards developments in a number of related areas in the 1990s. Just one example was in archival description. The first edition of ISADG, the International Standard for Describing Archives, was released in 1996, same year, and developed over the same period. And it's the same for ISAR-CPF, which is the International Standard for Describing contextual entities associated with archives, also released in 1996. Simple Dublin Core was released in 1995. These are all metadata standards, and metadata standards are an important part of records management, record keeping as well. And following AS4390, you had a series of record keeping metadata standards being developed, following on from research work done at Monash University, in particular the Australian Record Keeping Metadata Schema, in which I noticed Barbara was involved as well. And IT standards, they got a boost in records management as a records management tool in the influential work of David Behrman. Some of you might be old enough to remember his four tactics of management of electronic records: policy, systems design, records by design, as Jeff was mentioning, and implementation and standards. And in this case, it's about using IT standards to help enable digital records to transcend multiple generations of technological change. A number of people who were at that seminal week-long workshop, Understanding Electronic Record Keeping Systems, that Behrman ran at Monash University in 1993, Barbara again, were also active in the development of AS4390, which was then just getting underway. And its influence can be seen in AS4390 as well. And mention of Behrman and Monash reminds us of the intellectual ferment that was going on in research, in particular in the universities sector, about records and record keeping. And the record keeping continuum model, again developed at Monash, and the record keeping functional requirements project at the University of Pittsburgh are just two of the examples of that intellectual ferment. Now, one way of seeing how AS4390 fitted into the world of record keeping standards is to take a look at the broad kinds of standards that we can identify. And this is nothing authoritative about this particular categorization. It's just my take on it. Interoperability standards really come out of the world of engineering, manufacturing, and IT. It's so that a light bulb made by one firm can work in a light fitting made by another firm. But in the record keeping area, there are good examples. I mentioned descriptive standards before for archives. They're in part interoperability standards because they were developed originally to support data interchange between repositories and then to support federated searching and so on. And record keeping metadata standards are also in part interoperability standards because they're in part designed to support the migration of metadata from system to system. The second one, mandatory regulatory standards, that's really the way in which standards is used in the State Records Act. And you can divide it into two subcategories, one being outcomes-oriented standards, or when the proverbial hits the fan standards, which you can use when there's been a real failure of record keeping and the powers that be want to find out what went wrong and what performance measures weren't met. And secondly, there's checklist-oriented... Well, now, an example of that is the Full and Accurate Records Standard. I should mention that. That was issued under the State Records Act. And then there's checklist-oriented standards with objective requirements and that are auditable. And the Records Management Program Standard, again issued under the State Records Act when the Act was promulgated, is an example of that. And the third type is codifications of best practice, which obviously codify or describe best practice in a particular industry or discipline. So what was AS4390 in this categorisation? Well, the origin of AS4390 was in the quality standard, the ISO 9000 series of standards, when David Muldrich, records manager at BHP at the time, was concerned that ISO 9000, which was being implemented across industry, referred to making adequate records of quality processes according to standards, but the standards didn't exist. So how on earth were those records going to be, adequate records going to be made? And he was really the prime mover in getting IT21 committee set up within Standards Australia, leading to AS4390. But AS4390 was really developed as a codification of best practice. Because it was intended for use in any jurisdiction or industry, or any context of use, and we figured out that really we needed guidance more than anything else. But that begged the question, what is best practice? Should the standard that we're about to develop reflect established, widely accepted best practice, or should it reflect cutting edge, state-of-the-art practice, innovation? We opted for the latter, particularly to address the digital business and records environment, although that wasn't without debate as well within the committee. And because AS4390 wasn't designed as a compliance-oriented auditable standard, eventually its successor, AS ISO 15489, had to be supplemented by a record-keeping compliance handbook, HB 278, if you're taking notes, which was also developed by IT21 and released in 2009. So what does all that mean for us in the New South Wales public sector? Well, firstly, going back in our time machine again, there was a series of accountability crises in the late 80s and early to mid-1990s. Leading to investigations by ICAC, sounds familiar, the Ombudsman, the Police Royal Commission as well. And record-keeping failures were a common ingredient in those crises. And people talked a lot about standards of accountability and standards of record-keeping not being met and so forth. But again, there weren't defined standards against which to measure performance. And at the same time, the State Records Bill, as it was, until 1998, was being developed through most of the 90s. The most radical reform of the bill was the records management provisions, in which standards played and still play a key role. In the bill specifically, through the requirement that public officers, you guys, your records management programs need to conform to standards and codes of best practice approved by the State Records Authority. And we, not the IT21 committee, but we this time meaning the Records Management Office, one of the predecessors of State Records, developed the first drafts of those standards that I've mentioned already, standard on records, full and accurate records, records management programs, record storage as well, plus a couple of electronic records policies, while AS4390 was still being developed. And it meant that the kind of a feedback loop developed, in New South Wales at least, between the two projects, particularly because I and other RMO people were involved in the development of AS4390 as well as the developments taking place at the Archives Authority. And that was valuable. Well, it resulted in a lot of common ground in thinking and content. And it was valuable because it meant that the initial suite of records management standards and policies issued in advance of the promulgation of the State Records Act in 1999 was consistent with Australia's then new national records management standard. So now to the cutting edge content. I noted earlier that in developing AS4390 as a codification of best practice, IT21 opted to make it cutting-edge state-of-the-art as far as we could. To be frank, it was a bit of a curate's egg. It was cutting-edge in parts, but I want to highlight some of those parts now. Whoops, no, I've gone too far. Oh, no. I have to leave the other slide. That was meant to be a surprise. Okay, cutting-edge content. I've obviously put the slide in the wrong order. I quickly want to mention three things. Firstly, definitions. And oh, no, you say, he's going to talk to us about definitions. That'll be exciting. But I want to mention them not because I'm an anal retentive pedant who likes to define things, although guilty as charged, but because that part of the standard was an opportunity to clarify key concepts in the new thinking about the nature of records and record keeping, and which underpinned the more innovative parts of the standard. And also there are strict limitations in how you word standards, and there's not a lot of room for explanation. So really the definitions were just about the only opportunity we had to explain those concepts. And examples included the transactional and evidential nature of records, which was still a new way of thinking, the distinctions between data, information, documents, and records, and there are distinctions between those things, and the distinctions between information systems and record-keeping systems. Now, in my view, Part 3, strategies for the standard, and Part 5, the part on appraisal and disposal, are the most cutting-edge parts of AS4390. Part 3, because among other things, it set out and explained requirements for full and accurate records. There's that phrase again. And it used material derived from the University of Pittsburgh's record-keeping functional requirements project to do that, and explicitly acknowledged that in the standard. And that was one of those feedback loop areas that I mentioned. It elaborated on the transactional nature of records with a set of pithy examples of types of transactions and kinds of records that ought to result from those transactions, particularly to satisfy evidential and accountability purposes. And it provided examples to explain clearly how electronic records and documents, as we used to call them in those days, are both conceptually similar, related, and different. The key section in Part 3, in a way, was a section called Designing Record-Keeping Systems, which was based on another outcome from that Monash workshop in 1993 that I mentioned before. Clause 6.2 sets out a summary of what we know as the Dirks methodology. And again, oh no, now he's going to talk to us about Dirks. Well, yes, I am, but only briefly. And now we can bring up the Dirks monster. With apologies to Terry Gilliam. I want you to put aside all the baggage that's associated with the name of the Dirks methodology and with what some people think it's all about, including, frankly, the misguided and ham-fisted way it was implemented in the Commonwealth jurisdiction. Because the Dirks project and process is really about business analysis. We in the records management and archives profession had been saying for years that we had to be business analysts as a part of our skill set. And some of us had actually been doing that. But how to do it hadn't been clearly articulated, certainly not in an authoritative and widely accessible source like a National Records Management Standard. In a sense, Dirks turns records management inside out. Traditionally, records management was about answering the question, what do we do with all this stuff? How do we manage all these records that our organisations keep producing? In Dirks, instead, we ask, how do we satisfy the requirements for recorded evidence and information that are associated with our organisation's business activities and processes? And we can do that whenever it's needed, not just to produce disposal authorities, but when new systems are being developed, when services and business processes are being reimagined or moved to new platforms, when there's organisational change on a grand scale, where key legislation or responsibilities change, and that's a constant in certainly in the New South Wales public sector. And we do it before, if we can, before records even start being created in the changed environment. And we can answer the question, what records need to be generated in the first place and when in those business activities and processes? And what content and metadata do they need to include? So in essence, while there are 8 steps in the standard, I can't remember how many we ended up with in the manual, you analyse business activities and processes. You identify record-keeping requirements associated with them, and you design systems, in the very broad sense, to satisfy those requirements. Records by design, as Jeff mentioned. And similarly, Part 5 of the standard, appraisal and disposal, turned the concept of appraisal on its head. Instead of asking, how long do we keep all this stuff and when can we get rid of some of it, we ask, based on business analysis, what records do we need to be generated and captured into record-keeping systems in whatever form they may take in the first place, and how long do they need to be retained to meet business needs identified through business analysis or for further uses beyond the business context. Now, I'm oversimplifying it a bit. There was already some real sophistication in professional thinking about appraisal. And again, Barbara, you're not going to escape. Barbara's chapter in Keeping Archives 2 was a big step released in 1993, was a big step in that thinking. But you can see a family resemblance here between Part 3 and Part 5. And that was deliberate because it was based on common thinking. So, and you haven't even had to give me a bell to finish off. In conclusion, the 20th birthday of AS4390 is worth celebrating, not just because it was the first national records management standard in the world, not just because it led directly to the international records management standard that we know today, not just because it represents a particularly fertile period of innovation in our professional practice, but because its cutting-edge content still speaks to us and still challenges us today. Thank you very much for listening.